Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. If you want to gauge the influence of Chuck Berry on American music and culture, look no further than John Lennon, who said if you tried to give rock and roll another name, you might have called it Chuck Berry. A memorial service will be held for Berry on April 9th in his hometown of St. Louis, with a public viewing from 8 a.m. to noon at the Pageant Theater. Berry died at the age of 90 on March 18th. Bill McBride is a rock aficionado. The ISU English professor has also taught about Berry in his cultural studies class and touches on Berry in a couple of upcoming publications. He's also Sound Ideas culture commentator. Bill, thanks for stopping by Sound Ideas to talk about Chuck Berry.
Always great to be here, Mike.
Is John Lennon overstating Chuck Berry's role in the creation of rock and roll?
No and yes. So, you know, I've watched that video where he's on the Mike Douglas show and he's co-hosting with Yoko, and he is reading a cue card when he says that. Now, whether that was Mike Douglas's writers, I think John loved Chuck's work, and I've always loved that quote. Let's call it something else. You know, the actual name rock and roll is a euphemism for folks getting together romantically, and that is important about music and Chuck Berry.
Even if somebody else wrote it, John Lennon, I would imagine, if he didn't believe it, would not have said it.
Amen.
What about Rocket 88 and Ike Turner? That was in 51. Chuck Berry didn't have his first hit until 55.
Yeah, so, you know, he and Ike were kind of rivals, and sometimes Ike would have larger crowds around the St. Louis area, and but yeah, Rocket 88 is, you know, folks like to point to that as an early rock. You know, it gets slippery, the origins of things, the horizon of when actual rock and roll happened.
We'll talk about that nexus in musical history in just a moment, too. Tell me about Chuck Berry's path to music. Was he raised in a musical household?
So his, you know, he comes from both slave and Native American roots. Great-great-grandparents were. His father was a Baptist preacher and sang and performed, and his mother also. And they had a piano in the house, and he had a Victrola, and he had a Philco radio, and he got in trouble because he would always be in the back of it trying to figure out where that noise is coming from.
So he was tearing the equipment
up. He was tearing it apart.
When Chuck had his first hit, white musicians were listening to black artists and vice versa. Chuck Berry's first hit in 55, Maybelline, was based on Ida Red from Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys. And they reportedly heard that song from Jimmy Davis. Let's listen to Ida Red, and then we'll take a listen to Maybelline, and then we'll ask you about both of the songs. This is Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys and Ida Red.
Light in the parlor, fire in the great clock, on the mantelpiece, it's getting late. Curtains on the windows, snowy white, the parlor is pleasant on Sunday night. Ida Red, Ida Red, I'm a plum fool about Ida Red.
And now Maybelline by Chuck Berry.
Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started doing the things you used to do. As I was motivating over the hill, I saw Maybelline in a coupe de ville. A Cadillac rolling on an open road, nothing I'd run my V8 for. A Cadillac doing about 95, bumper to bumper rolling side to side. Maybelline.
Maybelline by Chuck Berry and Ida Red from Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys. I'm Mike McCurdy in the studio with ISU English professor Bill McBride. Can you hear the similarities in those two songs?
Well, sure. And I mean, but I'm really struck by the way he would coin a term, motivating, you know. He's got lots of those, botheration, too much botheration. But certainly the music, but you could hear when you contrasted those two, that roaring, rip-roaring guitar, which almost sounds a little out of tune when it comes in. I mean, that's rock, too, is having that guitar right up front. And that's something that we hadn't really heard before.
And guitar solos in his music
as well. And guitar solos, absolutely.
Yeah. Tell me about this nexus in music history in the mid-50s, where country like Bob Wills, rock and roll from Chuck Berry, along with rockabilly and blues, were all sort of hard to distinguish. You know, they eventually went on their separate paths, but tell me about that. It's not been really repeated either in musical history,
no,
at least not in the United States.
I want to go earlier, right? So because Chuck is listening to Glenn Miller. And they are being played on the black radio stations in East St. Louis, and that's where he's starting to hear some of this stuff. And if you think about some of the Glenn Miller, the Boogie Woogie stuff, he puts lyrics to some of those solos and tells his own American stories. He's so American. But yes, yes, the connection of all those forms of music. He would sometimes dress up in a cowboy hat. And I'm going to sing some of these hillbilly songs to a black audience, and they ate it up.
Beyond the music, what separates Ida Red from Maybelline? Can we dissect the lyrics a little bit of Maybelline to get at what makes it rock and roll? Because Bob Wills isn't singing about the same things that Chuck Berry's singing about.
No, because Chuck's in his car. I mean, those car, you know, the car culture. So, you know, let's say 1949 is a crucial year when Catcher in the Rye comes out and Death of a Salesman, where you get these two main characters who are young and are part of this culture. Youth culture is kind of invented, and Chuck's right there. And he cashes in, if you will, on that. The car, you know, I want my freedom, you know, all those films also from the 50s. It really explodes then because there is disposable income, maybe not in the poorer parts of the town, but that's certainly what Chuck aspired to.
Well, and he's talking about, you know, Maybelline, won't you be true? I mean, she's two-timing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
We're talking about sex here. You mentioned the phrase rock and roll is a euphemism for sex. With Chuck's music, the sexuality wasn't just below the surface.
No.
It was sort of in your face. Was this a formula that that worked for Chuck? Was Chuck actually writing a formula, or was he just writing about what he knew and what was going on in the lives of his teenage fans?
So, as you mentioned, I've taught the autobiography, which came out in 87. That was his great year when he also made Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll, the terrific film. And in that book, you can see he is obsessed with sex, and it gets him in a lot of trouble.
Well, let's talk about some of his legal trouble. He was convicted of transporting a minor across state lines. There was also the allegations and eventual settlement involving Berry videotaping women in the bathroom of one of his nightclubs. How tarnishing is this to Chuck Berry's legacy?
So in 59, he was arrested under the Mann Act for bringing an Apache waitress, Janice Escalante, over the line to work in his club. When you go through the autobiography, you see that he watches folks. He's invited by a famous singer who he won't divulge into a dressing room to watch them engage. He did get caught doing that, and he also got caught with 62 grams of cannabis, although he claimed that he was always no alcohol, no drugs, but there was that. In fact, he took some time out in the early 70s, right after coming up to My Ding-a-Ling, which again is another sexually
sure.
inflected song, to just hang out with the hippies. And he loved that. He kind of saw it as a flowering of what he started.
So, sure, he was no saint. He had some early non-sex-related brushes with the law early on,
yes.
Armed robbery, a trip to the reformatory, later tax evasion. Bill McBride has joined us in the past to talk about David Bowie. We've talked about film noir and Hitchcock. Today, we're talking about the life and influence on American culture of Chuck Berry. Tell me about Almost Grown. This is a song you wanted included today, and we'll take a listen in just a moment, but what should we listen for?
Well, it's that youth culture. Don't bother us. Leave us alone. This song, if you listen closely, you won't pick it out. You have to be told to look for him. But there's a teenaged Marvin Gaye singing in the background of this. This is, for me, the youth anthem, Almost Grown.
And it was an anthem in part made famous thanks to America, the film
absolutely.
American Graffiti.
Yes.
Almost Grown is Chuck Berry. Almost Grown, Chuck Berry. When you hear this song, what do you hear? What about what are the influences that you hear that shaped his music?
Okay, so we heard the outro of that song, none of the verse, and I'm not going to quibble because I love your show. But he's singing about leave us alone, leave kids alone, let them grow up on their own, and so on. Now, you could hear that, those Rocket 88, I mean, listen to that piano at the end there. And I just love that kind of doo-wop, although it's graduated past
sure.
50s doo-wop, that background singing. It's also Etta James and Harvey in the New Moon Glows, along with a young Marvin Gaye.
When it comes to influences, let's listen to what Chuck had to say on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. This is from November of 87.
When you were getting started, who did you
Here. I tell you, the main guy was Louis Jordan.
Louis Jordan.
Yeah, I wanted to sing like Nat Cole, with lyrics like Louis Jordan, with the swing of Benny Goodman, with Carl Hogan on, with Charlie Christian on guitar.
Right.
Playing Carl Hogan's riffs, who was Louis Jordan.
Right.
And with the soul of Muddy Waters, oh, I had it all mixed up.
That combination?
Yeah.
That's a nice blend.
Yeah.
Do you hear that in his music?
Well, I mean, you know, he's done his own research. He knows. That's everything I had to say. Yeah, Carl Hogan is the guitar player for Louis Jordan, and he adored him. You know, the only little thing he doesn't mention there is that he drives to Chicago and sees Muddy Waters in a club and goes up to him afterwards, and Muddy would talk to anyone. And he walked up there, and Muddy Waters sent him to Leonard Chess.
To Chess Records.
And that's the
where he got his big break.
He got his break.
That was Chuck Berry talking with Johnny Carson in 87. Late in his career, he's more of a nostalgic act, but he gets a boost thanks to filmmaker Taylor Hackford. What's that? What's that story about?
Yeah, that's 87. And I was a graduate student at Buffalo, New York, right before that. And
we're talking about the documentary Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll.
Yes, we are. And I saw Chuck live on a bill. He liked to open and then leave with Fishbone and the Butthole Surfers.
Really?
Yeah. and Chuck was terrific. You know, and he had a pickup band. Some local Buffalo fellas were there. I think they were all fellas. And he played great. He played all of his hits. He talked to the audience, and he was gone.
What do you want to say about Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll by Taylor Hackford?
Well, I just love that that film. And because of the dynamic between Keith Richards and Chuck Berry. So there's always been a little, you know, resentment that the Stones cashed in much more than Chuck ever did on Chuck Berry's music. And you can see that with Keith Richards as the musical director, he's trying to play Carol, and Chuck will not agree, saying, no, you are not bending the notes properly. No matter what Keith does, Chuck is going to say, no, you're not getting it. And in fact, Chuck knocked him out, Keith Richards out once backstage because Chuck was with a white girl, and Keith said something about it. And Chuck, who was a boxer and a hairdresser, which I love that about rock and roll, too. You know, Little Richard was a hairdresser.
His boxing career lasted about that long.
Yeah,
though.
No, yeah, he got knocked out.
He got a beat down.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's end with another song that you think is important. And it's thanks to another influence, Nat King Cole. Why is Havana Moon important to you?
Oh, so this is based on Calypso Blues by Nat King Cole. And this song, in a one way, goes nowhere. It's the same riff over and over again.
Well, but that's why I thought it was odd that you liked it, because it didn't seem to go anywhere for me either.
I think it's gorgeous. Let's listen.
American girl, come back to me. We'll sail away across the sea. We'll dock in New York, the buildings high. We find a home up in the sky, Havana Moon.
Havana Moon, Chuck Berry. Bill, what do you want to say about this song?
So it's got that great, several pop songs have this kind of, you know, that song Silhouettes on the Shade, where a guy is angry that his girl, he can see the silhouette on the shade, and then he realizes he's on the wrong block. So this one, Chuck's persona in this song is waiting for his American girl to come to Havana to come get him on a boat, and she doesn't come, and he drinks rum, he falls asleep, he wakes up in the morning and sees her boat headed back to America without him. And I just love that kind of, you know, ironic Henry ending there.
All right, Bill, thanks for joining us to talk about Chuck Berry's life and music. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike.
Bill McBride is an English professor. His teaching interests include film, drama, and cultural theory. He's also taught and written about Chuck Berry. The rock and roll icon died at the age of 90 on March 18th. A public memorial service is scheduled for April 9th. You're listening to Sound Ideas.
Me lay down alone. fall asleep, the boat she comes.